You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director here at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Thursday, June 6th. Also, a great pleasure to be joined here in the studio by two veteran journalists, and I do mean that in the best sense of that term. Howard Weiss-Tisman is the Southern Vermont reporter for Vermont Public Radio, and always great to have you with us, Howard.
Great to be back. Thank you.
And Greg Sukenik, of course, many of you know, he is now the engagement and opinion editor for the Bennekom Banner, Manchester Journal, and Brattleboro Reformer, and we'll probably hear a little bit more about that before we're done today.
Fun to be here, as always.
Good to have you back. Well, I guess the place to start, even though it's been over a week or so since the legislature, in its sort of disjointed way, arrived at an adjournment, still worth maybe kind of taking a quick look back at kind of what happened there in that last confusing week or so when the House and the Senate seemed to be unable to come to an agreement around two bills that were very important to the Democratic majorities in both houses. That, of course, is the paid family leave bill and the minimum wage bill. By the time they got to the end of it, it seemed like the differences between the two versions that they were both talking about were pretty pretty slight, but nevertheless, they were unable to kind of find the sweet spot there and come up with a common plan. So that has been now been punted forward, I guess, till next January when the legislature returns. But I guess, what did the two of you make of that whole scenario there in that last confusing week or so? Any takeaways?
The reason why it was such a big issue is because they came into the session with majorities in both the House and the Senate, and both of these issues kind of carried over from last year as well. So there was a lot of hope that they were going to be able to move ahead. The governor vetoed, I believe, both last year,
right?
So there was a paid family leave, and there was a minimum wage. So there was a lot of hope that they were going to get it together. Both houses passed both bills, but in the end, they were not able to come to agreement in committee. There was a lot of drama at the end. I think there was a lot of surprise, I think, in the Senate when the House made the declaration that they were not going to come together, mm-hmm. that they were not going to keep working on it. And the whole thing just blew up in the end. Now, we had Mitzi Johnson and Tim Ash on Vermont Public Radio. It was a great interview. If you want to go to vpr.org, it's there. But it really was, and they talked about it. So a couple of key points there. One is, as you said, this is the first year of the biennium, and they're going to come right back at it next year and look at both of those bills. There was some debate about whether or not the House would have had a veto-proof majority so that if these bills did pass and they did get to the governor's desk and Governor Scott vetoed them, whether or not the House would be able to move on it. So, like you said, in the end, they were very close, but they were not able to get it over the finish line.
Like, there was a lot of hesitance to have a special session over this as well. What's interesting from the Bennington County angle on the story is a number of Bennington County Democrats actually were voted against the family leave proposal that was on the table, which left so the Democrats and progressives had a majority but not a supermajority that could override a veto. And there's some discussion in John Waters' most recent column in 7 Days with Bennington Town Democratic Committee Chair, whose name just flew
out
the
window.
Tom Hill, yes, about whether there might be primaries in the offing. Yeah. But there's some discomfort about the proposal and what it might cost business and what it might cost taxpayers. And I mean, we were talking a little bit before we started this taping about sometimes it takes time to get good law right, and you can do a lot of harm by rushing through bad law. So perhaps it's simply a case where members weren't quite comfortable with the potential cost, or thought that maybe we were starting too big too fast. So, and then there's always the interesting dynamic of Bennington County folks being, you know, advised by folks in Chittenden County what to do, and you know, interesting dynamic there perhaps. But I think there is time for them to come back and take another swing at it in January, and
certainly.
You know, how they'll hear a lot between now and then from their constituents about whether this was a good delay or whether people feel like this wasn't the right proposal.
Well, I think it's also important to point out that while there was a lot of support from the left on these bills, that the business community still had a lot of issues with it. I spoke to Laura Sebilia, who represents part of this district, and John Gagnon, and both of them had problems with it. Laura voted against, or would have voted against, both the bills. She missed one of the votes for a family issue. And John, I can't remember, he supported one and voted against the other one. Laura is an independent. John is a Democrat. So there wasn't universal support for all of this. So there was some pushback from the business community, from some people in the center. So it'll be interesting, even when they get back next year, it still might not be a slam dunk. They still have some more to do.
Plus, it's an election year, and that creates a whole other dynamic.
The magic of having a two-year term for everybody. I mean, even sort of to the more progressive side, and I'm not trying to put words in her mouth at all, but Kathleen James talked about this on her Facebook page, and she certainly would identify as progressive on this issue, and she was generally in support of it. But she talked about that the minimum wage vote was a tough one, and that you know she heard from a number of constituents, and there were real concerns about what it might actually cost business, particularly small business that doesn't have the margins to absorb a wage increase. And so, you know, they seem like simple issues, but there's a lot of granular detail that has to be
the devil in the detail.
Indeed,
yeah, just one more issue. I know we're getting deeply into this one, but something that Tim Ash said on VPR is that there was also a lot of uncertainty about what the governor would do with this, whether he would allow it, whether he'd allow it without signing it, or whether he'd veto it. And I think that added to a lot of the uncertainty going in. He really played his cards close to his vest. Through the session for a lot of these issues. And so it wasn't clear even what he was going to do with it. So,
yeah, it certainly was quite interesting that the different approach the governor took this year compared to last year when, you know, it was much more confrontational. This year, kind of laid back, waited for the Democrats to come up with a package, and they were not able to do so. So, as I think one top Democrat said, well, he walks away looking like the adult in the room. So, quite an interesting contrast from a year ago. But I guess to be continued. A few other bills that came up, we'll just try to run through them fairly quickly here. That the legislature did pass. We were talking earlier, lead water testing in schools, the handgun waiting period, the plastic bag ban, also the abortion proposal. I guess that would be a constitutional amendment. Those are all, that's a fairly,
a lot of work.
Pretty good track record.
The lead water issue is interesting in because that it has its roots here in this community. It kind of came out of the Bennington PFOA issue.
Yes.
So when the state was looking for PFOA in water and starting to test schools, Vermont A&R officials worked with some other states, and they found out that this lead issue in schools was happening in Massachusetts. And Massachusetts was testing its schools. So it's kind of interesting. It came right out of that PFOA testing. Vermont did a pilot last winter. They tested 16 schools, and every school had traces of lead. I think 5 or 7 had enough that they had to actually remove some faucets. So starting this session, there was a lot of agreement that they wanted to get something done. They wanted to test every school. They wanted to come up with a standard for it. They wanted to find the money for it. But again, the devil's in the detail, and it took them quite a while to come to understanding. I sat in on a couple of hearings at the State House. There were some people, and this has to do with how much lead would require remediation. There are some public health officials, they wanted to set the limit at 1. They said any amount of lead is bad, especially for kids. The Senate set its level at 3 parts per billion. The House set it at 5. And a lot of the discussions ensued just where that would go. Now, they compromised. They ended up going with 4. They put side about $3 million for the testing and for the remediation. And so the testing has to happen while the kids are at school, because it's important that the water is circulating through the pipes.
Right.
So what's interesting about this, I did a story a couple months ago, is that there was hopes that they were going to start testing this school year. But because it took the legislature so long, testing is off a full year now. So they're hoping that it's all done by the end of 2020. Which is disappointing, because if they come across a school where kids are ingesting lead, and to think that they put it off a whole year because they couldn't come to
it,
it's kind of disappointing.
That wouldn't look good at all.
But nonetheless, they did end up passing it. In the end, it's the strongest in the United States, supposedly, as far as it. And they're going to start tearing into it, I think, September, when the kids get back to school.
There's a couple of interesting issues that come off out of that discussion. I mean, first of all, we're talking about a legislature that has a lot of new members. So there was a fair amount of, trying to sort of learn the process while dealing with something important. There was a lot of, when you talk about this broad agreement but granular details, every one of those parts per billion is, that action level, also talks to the amount of money they're going to need to remediate whatever they find. And so, I mean, we're talking apparently five parts per billion is the standard for bottled water. So this is still a very, very low threshold for action. But, you started getting into discussions about whether, you're making the perfect the enemy of the good. And ultimately, it's good news that an agreement was reached. But at the same time, the delay does put off for a year what they'd hoped to have done by the end of the year. Sometimes good law takes time.
Yeah. Mm. And also also child care facilities as well as schools. So it's a lot of testing. It's a huge project. I mean, it's kind of easy to talk about the numbers and everything. So you're talking about, I can't remember the number, 300 or 400 buildings, 10 or 20 taps in each. So it's a really big project. Part of the delay was, I believe they're ready for it now, but whether or not the Department of Health could even handle this.
Sure.
Because they're going to be getting thousands of types. Yeah. It's very important to keep it straight. It's very important to make sure that all the water samples are clean. So
you don't want to miss one.
No, it's a big project. So I'm sure we'll be reporting on it as it gets underway in September.
And while I don't think there's much suspense around it yet, none of those four bills we just talked about have been signed yet by the governor. Interesting note. Now, no signal or indication that he's not going to sign them.
The reproductive rights bill was that was allowed to pass into law by the governor. The others were waiting on.
You're right.
And I think that there's actually two issues there. There's that bill, and then there's the constitutional amendment, which I think is on a. Those are separate track, right?
That would wind up being a statewide vote later, next year or the year after.
Right.
But
the plastic ban is interesting because, again, that bill has roots in communities around here.
Brattleboro
was the first
Manchester.
One. Manchester
had a very lot of student activists, like we're talking about
elementary
school students. And Manchester passed a non-binding resolution. They decided to wait to see what the state was going to do. So. Everybody wins, I guess, as long as this becomes law.
And one of the reasons why they were pushing the state law is because grocers didn't want this kind of piecemeal, different towns around the state, maybe a store that has, in different towns, and one town would allow it and one not. So even though the Grocers Association, they were reluctant about it maybe 2 years or so, they didn't push back a lot this year. They kind of saw the writing on the walls. They saw that towns were doing it piecemeal. And in the end, the Grocers Association supported it. And I think that in the end, again, they're saying it's one of the strongest ones in the country. Also bans plastic
straws
to go, and you have to ask for a straw.
Right.
Yeah.
I've been asked to ask for a straw on a couple of occasions. That was an important consideration because for folks who maybe can't simply pick up a glass or drink out of a glass.
People with disabilities, if they don't have use of their hands, they need a straw.
There need to be some exception there.
And then when, as far as the governor goes as well, I think that there's still this question of stores putting a 10-cent charge on paper that I think the governor is not entirely excited about. So that's another one he hasn't signed yet.
Right.
And we're going to have to see how that shakes out.
Right. And that handgun waiting period one would be an interesting one, too, because I know last year he kind of surprised, I suppose, a lot of his supporters by signing some gun legislation that they weren't expecting, I suppose. And they were saying, I heard him say earlier that, well, we've gone about as far as we need to go on gun stuff.
Yeah,
this would have been a 24-hour waiting period for handguns, so that someone might just need a cooling off period and decide
or
if they really needed
a bad emotional decision.
That's the one everyone's watching. It's going to be fascinating to see what he does with that. I'm sure he has a lot of his supporters on the right are against it. Like you said, last year
he took such a bruising over it last year.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. It's on his desk. I think it landed yesterday, so we'll be finding out soon.
Okay. Well, moving down to the southern end of the state and kind of getting more regional and local here, several interesting things going on, stories that both of you guys have been involved with. Greg, one of the things we wanted to talk about a little bit was workforce development and health for state colleges. What's going on with that?
Well, that sort of plays into what's going on with the colleges that are closing around us. The College of St. Joseph, Green Mountain College, and in Bennington, Southern Vermont College. The good news is that Southern Vermont College's agreement with Southwestern Vermont Medical Center over tuition reimbursement for nursing graduates who meet certain requirements and get licensed. Castleton University is going to be picking up that agreement. So that's not going to skip any, time. And so, I mean, the hospital was, interested in maintaining that because they want to continue the supply of trained nurses. And like many other professions in Vermont, finding trained employees who are able to fill existing jobs is a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of the things that the legislature didn't do was, there was a proposal to increase the Vermont State College System funding over 5 years, $5 million additional dollars a year to try to raise the state's rather low support of operations for those schools. Instead, they came back with $3 million for 1 year, which did offset a tuition increase. But then the state Senate turned that into $2.5 million of permanent money and $500,000 of one-time money, which is puzzling. We're talking a lot about workforce development. Certainly that came up during the economic summit in Dover. And it's something that you hear all the time just out in the street,
sure.
Whether it's people in professions, electricians, tradespeople, folks looking for college graduates to fill existing jobs. So I guess the upshot is, sort of coming back to the Castleton agreement, there's ability for employers and schools to work together to try to make these things happen without waiting for Montpelier. But one wonders when Montpelier figures it out on this issue.
Meanwhile, over on your side of the state, Howard, a couple of hospitals over there, Springfield and Gifford, are struggling.
Yeah, there are a lot of hospitals around the state. This is an issue that we've been following and we will continue to follow to make this timely. So the hospitals put in their budgets in July, August. So that's coming up. So that's going to be really interesting to watch because the Green Mountain Care Board is going to be approving those budgets, and I think they're going to be looking a lot closer at budgets this year. That's something that happened in Springfield. I don't know if people know, Springfield Hospital lost about $14 million over 2 years.
Stunning.
The CEO of Springfield said recently that the hospital was likely to declare bankruptcy, probably in the next month or so. So they're in tough shape, and there's been some talk about a year ago, 2 years ago, just how transparent Springfield Hospital was with their numbers. Now they give all the numbers to the Green Mountain Care Board, the budgets are approved, but then all of a sudden $14 million disappeared almost overnight. No one thinks there was any nefarious. They had an audit done. I don't think the money was stolen, but it was just poor management. So about six or seven of the state's 14 hospitals lost money last year. A lot of the hospitals are in tough shape. And this goes right back to where we're talking about workforce development.
Sure.
There are a lot of challenges. A lot of the challenges have to do with nursing and doctor staff. And some of these hospitals can't find local staff. when they can't find local people, they go through agencies. They hire what's called locums, which are doctors, and they also have these traveling nurses. Now, when those folks are hired, they pay about a third more. And when you're operating on a shoestring budget, that could be the difference between, you know, being in the black and being in the red.
That is a giant difference for a small hospital the size of Springfield or for Grace Cottage or Gifford.
They say it's one of their main issues.
Sure.
So there's a lot going on with hospitals. I will say Southern Vermont Medical Center down in Bennington is one of the stronger hospitals, at least on paper, when you look at how they're doing and if they're making their margins. It's kind of interesting, the larger hospitals, Rutland, UVM, Southern Vermont, are doing pretty well. The small rural hospitals are really struggling. And this is a national issue.
Sure.
If you Google it across the country, about 100 rural hospitals have closed. There are some people that say in the next 20, 30 years, we might lose a third of them because these same issues are happening across the country. There are not enough workers. There are not enough people. There are not enough customers walking through the doors, and that's why these hospitals are struggling. So,
and not only are you talking about a healthcare issue, but you're also talking about the major employer in a lot of these communities. And just south of us, when North Adams Regional Hospital closed, and that was a major blow to North Adams, because not only was it, you know, a hospital that was not a 45-minute ride to Bennington or to Pittsfield, it was also one of the major employer in North Adams, and so. For much smaller towns such as ours, I mean that's a significant blow if it comes to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Bottom line, Vermont has not lost a hospital, and that is really the last thing anybody wants. So in a way, people feel like we're a little bit ahead of the curve here. That we haven't lost a hospital yet, as bad as things are in Springfield and Gifford and some of the other hospitals. The doors are still open. And there's some hope that maybe with some regionalization, maybe with some sharing, there might be a way to get out of this mess. It's going to be tough, though, the same way a lot of people say. And there's no silver bullet, and there's really no way to sugarcoat it. The hospital system is in tough shape.
All right. Meanwhile, Act 46, the grand finale, finally at hand.
We think.
Limping to the finish line.
July 1st, I guess, was the final deadline. And a couple of districts over in the eastern side of the state struggling a little bit, Westminster, Grafton, Athens, and also a few communities around Brattleboro as well, uneasily sort of finding their way to a merger, a new consolidation, and also down in Pownell.
I know
we had a bit of a back and forth down there too.
Southwestern Vermont Supervisor Union, that district of Bennington, Pownell, Woodford, and Shaftesbury, they've got themselves aboard and they're moving forward.
Right.
On your side of the world, I believe it's the Wyndham Northeast.
Wyndham Northeast is holding that. You know, Act 46 was a law of deadlines, and it was the phase-in approach. There was deadlines over the past 3 years about what districts could do it voluntarily and when their boards needed it. And July 1st, 2019 is kind of the final deadline
for this is it,
really
guys.
Long,
yeah.
Very emotional. Yeah. And so it's fascinating just to see, so what's going to happen now? So all these districts are coming together. I'm hearing different reports. I'm hearing that there are some districts right nearby here. Dover and Wardsboro are putting some plans together, and they put out a press release saying about a new STEM program that they're going to start in Wardsboro that the folks in Wardsboro said they'd never be able to do without this. We're also hearing talks around the state about some schools closing up in Addison County. Reading up near Woodstock, there's been a lot of back and forth about closing the school buildings. So it was a big law. I mean, people said this was a historic change, that this hasn't happened, I think, back in the 30s or so when they consolidated again.
I forgot the name of it.
But it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it looks like most, just about, as you said, Wyndham Northeast, up Westminster, Athens, Grafton, they're the last holdouts.
And then Stamford is working with across the state line with Clarksburg.
Right. That's kind of
so
interesting.
So apparently that would actually take an act of Congress or
right.
something
yeah.
along those lines. But they're moving forward. They're confident that's the right because it's a situation where it's a border town where it really is a closer relationship with Northern Berkshire than it is with its surrounding neighbors.
Halifax. Yeah. It's a mountain one way and a straight shot the other way.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Well, the ripple effects will be fascinating to follow.
And another incidence of, you know, sort of unintended consequences of a law that, you know, in terms of the importance of getting granular and taking time to actually work things out.
Because
there have been unintended consequences that were not anticipated.
Right. Well, we have a few minutes left, and Greg, I know you want to tell us a little bit about this new publication you're going to
Indeed.
Be overseeing.
Sure. Actually, we're two issues in. We have started a new arts and living feature section in the weekend editions of the Brattleboro Reformer and the Bennington Banner. It's called Southern Vermont Landscapes. This sort of refers to the style of it, really. It's much more photo-driven. It's longer, in-depth feature stories. We're talking about culture. We're talking about food. So it might be about the dance or music or theater that's going on all around us. But it might also be folks who are artisans or are making a craft-based product or are in agriculture. Cheesemakers. We had a story about the Gemmel Garden Creamery in Pownall with its four cows making terrific skyr style yogurt. Mm. So it's an interesting and fun opportunity, and I've been came on board with that in the past couple weeks and been working pretty hard on it, and so it's been a lot of fun. It's something very different from what I was accustomed to doing.
Okay.
So pick up a copy.
There you go. Now we know.
Right.
We have about 30 or 40 seconds left. I know we wanted to touch upon a few changes of the guard, so to speak, that just happened locally this week. Police Chief Michael Hall in Manchester announced that he's going to be stepping down. Mike has been with the Manchester Police Department, I think, for over 35 years, 37 is the number that sort of comes to mind, and has been the chief there since, I think, 2013, 2014,
Trust
somewhere in that area. So that will certainly be a milestone moment for the police department there, and also our next-door neighbor here at GNAT TV, Jackie Wilson, the school superintendent of the Bennington Rutland Supervisory Union, also announced earlier this week that she would be stepping down next year, June of 2020, as the school superintendent of the BRSU.
It's a departure of folks who sort of saw really significant change in their time. And just think about what policing was like when Mike Hall signed on as a police officer in Manchester and the issues that the department is dealing with now. And you think about, Jackie Wilson brought the Taconic and Green District through its own Act 46 issue and, you know, into its future. And also, you know, two mergers, one here and also one in Paulette and Rupert. So those are significant roles in the community. It'd be interesting to see how the process plays out in terms of finding successors.
Right. Right. No, it'll be interesting. Anyway, I guess that's what we got for today. I want to thank you all for being with us. I hope you found the show interesting. I want to thank Howard Weiss-Tisman of Vermont Public Radio, Greg Sukenik of the Bennington Banner, Brattleboro Reformer and Manchester Journal.
It's a mouthful.
Engagement and opinion editor, and also editor of the new Landscapes piece. Thank you all for being with us today. It's been great to have you with us, and we'll see you again the next time.
Thank you.
Have a great
Thanks.
Day.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.TV.